guys, welcome to Ride Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. Welcome. Today's episode is all about the hypocrisy of the New York Times, the fake inclusiveness of the left, and what's the difference between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation. So we'll deep dive with that. Our guest today is Chris Alvarez. He's a former staff sergeant with the United States Air Force, a program manager for a business intelligence company, and at an added bonus, my husband. So Chris, welcome to the show and let's jump right in. Hey Chris, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be on again.
So you're a VIP on the show. You've been here several times, but you're also the host's husband.
Supposedly. Allegedly. Come on, we have to use newspaper speak.
I have a marriage certificate to prove it. Come on.
I don't know how journalists work nowadays, but they call everything allegedly, so we'll see.
We are married, ladies and gentlemen, even though he denies it.
There is court documentation, so we can stop the allegedly. So, okay, convicted. Guilty as charged.
So you're here to talk about the New York Times and how liberal they are. Is this like a surprise?
I'm sorry. Was that news? Was that the news today? Because I think we can call it a day if that's the news.
So there's an opinion writer in the New York Times. She was hired on right after Trump won the White House because the New York Times was trying to be more inclusive. They like to say they're the paper of record, so they wanted to invite new voices to the table so that they could cover news from different angles.
I want to ask something. Do they literally call themselves that?
Yes, that's what the New York Times is called, the paper of record. It's not. It used to be said that it's not true unless you see it in the New York Times.
That disturbs me, and that's probably why I never wanted to read that publication.
What are you talking about? Back in the day, the New York Times was a really important publication. It was the most important publication in the world.
Back before I was alive. Okay, understood. So historical implications. During my lifetime, their relevancy has waned.
Well, because they suck now. It's a liberal propaganda newspaper.
And they threaten their editors. I'm not even sure this person's necessarily a writer. She's a editor. She's supposed to take in this stuff. For context, we're talking about Barry Weiss, who was hired on by James Bennett. And apparently they're supposed to be bringing on these new interesting voices, because if everything's left, hey, you run out of, you can only bash Trump so many times a day, and then you got to run one other article. So one other article could be something from not hard left, but half left, you know, one quarter left. Maybe somewhere in the middle we can do this.
But she's not even a conservative. She's a centrist. She's just willing to listen to the right wing. That's like a sin.
So you're talking about the fact that she's an actual liberal and believes in liberty, not hard left, calls themselves a liberal.
I guess I'm living in a topsy-turvy world. It used to be, you know, it was the marketplace of ideas. You would have it out, have a debate, have a healthy debate, and then you would let the people decide. Now it's no. There is a talking point. There's a party line. You tiptoe that. You can't deviate. And if you even deviate slightly, you are a poison. You're a danger to inclusiveness.
You know, the funny thing is this is a common issue with the left and even going as far as communism. In China, there's a scary story of this woman who was a communist, but she wasn't the right kind of communist. So back when Mao was taking over, she wanted, I guess, something more Soviet than Mao, and was thrown in jail, raped repeatedly, beaten, eventually died. Now the propaganda says she was a communist hero because, well, she stayed a communist even despite all that and was just trying to push back and say, well, can we have a different brand of communism? So they are eating their own, and they've been doing that for a long time.
But look at the crisis that's triggered the decision to hire Ms. Weiss. They failed to predict the phenomenon of Trump. They could not fathom that he could win the presidency. Like, it was impossible in their mind for that to even happen. So she was brought on to extend an olive branch, you know, the kooks, you know, the kooks on the right, the ones that are not as sophisticated as, you know, the ones in the urban elite centers. So
you're talking about the deplorables.
Yes, the deplorables, Chris, exactly.
So she was brought in to, you know, cater to the deplorables, even though the deplorables don't rate the New York Times, but I digress.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This whole thing about the newspaper of record is news to me. That's the news.
How can you not know this? This is the, okay. New York Times used to have, you know, there was a weight to that name. The New York Times. It's a thing.
That's the news today. So the news is not that it's a left-wing publication, because we already knew that. The news is that they still actually think that they're the paper of record. Which, by the way, the first time I heard it is not when you said it, but actually when Ms. Weiss said it several times in her resignation letter. And I kept looking at it like the paper of record. Why does she keep saying that? And it turns out she was very proud of her work with that publication to the point of quoting one of its founders. I think she quoted the founder of the editorial and opinions page. Showing how far they have strayed from their original vision, from what they purport to be.
So it's interesting, and let's give our listeners some context. She was harassed on Slack, you know, the company chat that is common in a lot of big corporations. People targeted her as the reason why they didn't have an inclusive enough culture at the New York Times, said that she should be fired, used an axe emoji next to her name on intra-office communications.
I still want to know how you get an axe emoji on Slack. I've used it a few times, and I'm going to look this up. How do I want to battle axe somebody on Slack.
But it's a very toxic work culture. So listeners out there, do any of you feel as a conservative that you are, you know, given the eye, the evil eye at work because people know that you have conservative points of view? If it's happening at the New York Times, it has to be happening across the country.
I find that odd, though, because me coming from the military environment, you're more likely to get side-eyed by having extreme liberal views. I mean, if you come out as transgender in the military, they're just going to be like, that's cool. Here's your separation papers. Please be on your merry way. The VA is over there. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
So here's an interesting discussion. Could it be that the liberal urban centers have strayed so far from the mainstream America that in those specific locations, you even having centrist points of view makes you an outlier?
The thing that gets interesting, though, is look at the population. They think they're the majority because the majority of people, as far as citizenry, live inside of a city. So your population is inside these dense cities. Your land mass is much more dispersed in the non-urban centers. And we saw this play out also in France, same as America, except we actually got our non-urban or supposedly non-urban leader, where you're seeing a fight and everything, it's not liberal conservative, it's really urban and rural. And that's the true fight of today, because the liberals are not liberal. The city people are not liberal. They don't believe in liberty because they can't have liberty. Any liberty they have would be the nuisance to
them. This is labor. A strange form of fascism. You must believe this, and you can only believe this. If you stray from this, you are an evil, bad person that needs to
you
be
are
persecuted.
A Nazi.
Yes.
You are a Nazi if you don't like how Nazi we are.
So says the Nazi.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This is scary. Here in the United States of America, we have the First Amendment right to express ourselves. How can we have reached the point that the press, one of the guardians of liberty historically, is now the primary culprit of censorship?
Well, we have to remember that individual liberty is that. And this company has every right to say, hey, we're going to get a letter from Tom Cotton and we're going to dump it directly into the shredder because they have a First Amendment right to not do it. These people have First Amendment rights. She has a First Amendment right. This editor, Ms. Weiss, has every right to speak her mind, both within her platform and within other platforms such as Twitter or whatever. And these various platforms, because they're private entities, have every right to say no. They also have a bit of responsibility, particularly in the New York Times internally. There's a problem when their HR is not taking action on harassment, especially stuff that looks a little violent, or even if it's not violent, but it's degrading other personnel. If HR doesn't step in, management should. And this is a failure of leadership. This is a failure of someone who's supposed to be the leader in the First Amendment, the leader in freedom of speech, has now failed not only them and their cause, but their personnel. And that's the worst part.
So here's the problem. I think that that demoralizing behavior that she was experiencing was just a manifestation of what the majority of the people in that office believed in. They didn't want conservatives there. That was a management decision that was made by one specific manager to bring on new voices. And that wasn't shared by the majority of people there. They just want an echo chamber. They want to sit in their ivory towers and look down at the deplorables and say, look, you're evil. And that's why they're going to miss again when Trump gets reelected, because they have no idea what the silent majority wants or needs.
Well, there's still plenty of there's people on the left and the right that love their echo chamber. So we have this problem of people need to be smart enough to listen, to be able to entertain an idea without having to accept it. And there's a lot of people on the left and the right that can't handle it. Now, the people that are being more snowflake-ish, as we like to call it nowadays, tends to be on the people on the left. There's a couple of people on the right that get haywire, but it seems like it's getting to a point where most mainstream media is controlled by the left, and these leftists cannot tolerate different ideas, and that's pretty bad.
It's horrible. And if you think about it, we find ourselves in a world where conservatives are the ones standing up for the First Amendment. It's conservatives who are fighting against censorship. Now, we're supposed to be, you know, the reactionary types.
McCarthy's.
Yeah.
The party of McCarthy is now the ones fighting for the First Amendment. And now the McCarthyism, and it was brought up as literally the word McCarthyism was used inside of the New York Times. What I thought was interesting, though, there was another article that I was talking about and talking about some of the aftermath. And they actually said that they don't actually believe that's the majority view. It's just that the squeaky wheels are really good at dropping the hammer on anyone who dissents. So other people who truly believe in First Amendment rights but know not to step out of line, that's their silent majority. The article indicated, at least, that there is a silent majority working at the New York Times that is going to stay silent, because they know that these crazy people are crazy and are willing to cause any kind of harm that can get away with.
But then that small group controls the fate of a once prestigious publication.
Failure of leadership, once again. If you're a leader and you're supposed to be standing up for a founding principle of our nation and what's an important principle across the world, freedom of speech, and you're the paper of record, supposedly, and you don't let the record show that there's diverse opinions, and you don't let these people do their jobs, and you let the heckler's veto win. Keep in mind, even the Supreme Court has ruled against allowing the heckler's veto, but this quote-unquote leader has not been a leader and has allowed the heckler's veto.
You know what's really scary? That these people have control of a major media market. They are considered an authority. They're considered something of prestige.
So are they?
For the mainstream media, yes. So that's the example.
Supposedly. But I think they're losing their influence because of the psychosis.
No, because the other media outlets still respect them. It's not about anymore trying to attract
the mainstream media.
Yes, but it's the same echo chamber. These are the people they go to cocktail parties with. Well, in pre-COVID world, cocktail parties, go to dinner with, socialize, go to conventions. It's the same group. They're not looking for new eyeballs. They're just looking for acceptance within their group.
Which, by the way, I would really love for the New York Times to go ahead and have their cocktail parties again. No masks. You don't have to have masks. You're fine. Go ahead.
No mask for them.
They don't have to, you know?
It's optional.
I believe in liberty.
You want liberty. So do you think that there is any way of backpedaling after you've reached this point of censorship at an organization?
I don't think they want to. They haven't wanted to for a long time. Someone stepped in trying to fix this. And when they had the rug pulled out from them, once again, that individual's name was James Bennett. And James Bennett apparently was the one that hired Barry Weiss. This person was truly trying to say, hey, let's be inclusive and include a few more voices. And the heckler's veto won. And he resigned after that Tom Cotton incident, where they were about to publish it and they ripped it out at the last minute. And after that, Barry Weiss lost her support. Total lack of leadership, because the only thing that's left is echo chamber. If not someone who actually screams this stuff, then someone who is complicit in the fascism.
So that's an interesting conversation right there. Inclusive no longer means what it used to mean. Because back when I was, you know, coming up in the world, inclusive was, oh, we're going to take your opinion. We're going to take your opinion. We're all going to sit down, listen to each other, and everybody has an opportunity to express themselves. And it's an inclusive environment for everybody. Now inclusive is, oh, you don't think the way I do? Out. Because
including your idea is not inclusive. And that was one of the things that was brought up as hilarious, that we have to exclude her voice for the sake of inclusivity. I imagine this woman would be just fine sitting down with a transgender person and interviewing them. I looked at her list of people that she's interviewed, and it's impressive. It's interesting.
Very, very diverse group of people, different backgrounds, different political persuasions. Like, she brought a lot of different people to the table. Not the knee-jerk reaction is not always to be a crazy liberal.
I'm looking at this list. I thought one of the really interesting ones that she brought up was, I'd never heard this name before, Dorsa Derekashimi, and I probably mispronounced that, and I offer my apologies to everyone on that, but this sounds interesting. An Iranian chess champion, which I did a quick Google search, and she is a chess champion for the United States now, because, of course, the only place where you can be a woman doing this sort of thing is in the Western world, and only the United States gives you these opportunities. All these other places that even chide us on not welcoming immigrants are the first ones to pull people over in trains and beat the crap out of them. So we actually legitimately still welcome immigrants better than any other country. But then we let them be our chess champions.
Because we don't care where you come from as long as you're willing to contribute to the American agenda, whatever that agenda is. Even if it's sports, science, medicine, whatever American agenda we're trying to advance, as long as you're on board, we're cool.
If you took off everyone's uniform at the Olympics, you would not be able to tell who was an American.
Mm-hmm.
You would look at somebody and be like, oh, you're part of the Japanese or Korean team, USA? Oh, and your teammate over here, wow, so we have, you know, a Mexican and Israeli. We have all these different nations melted in, and yeah, probably a white person in there too. But we're not monochromatic.
Well, and that's the politics of division tries to feed on our differences. And that's what's going on right now in this country. And I think this is important to emphasize. Right now, they want to divide us. They want us to concentrate on a Black national anthem. They want us to concentrate on our history and our failures. We shouldn't remember our successes. We can only concentrate on the negative. Why? Because that is advantageous to people who have political agendas on both sides.
I'm trying to destroy it. I thought what was interesting is a article that Barry Weiss is apparently famous for, and I went ahead and read it, was her actually celebrating cultural appropriation. Reading correlated articles, I mean, there are people that will say, oh, you're supposed to appreciate, not appropriate, something like that. But she actually puts out a strong case for why it is good for a proper intermingling of cultures. And it's funny because, once again, the left is eating their own to the point that they're attacking Black rappers because they have an Asian theme to a rap video, which, by the way, I've seen that with several rap artists. I don't recall the one that was in that article, but I recall watching Nicki Minaj that actually had a not visually, it had actually a nice storyline, and it was Japanese aesthetic with Black people in it.
But it used to be appreciation could mean that you could also emulate. I mean, I grew up with stuff like anime and Sailor Moon, and I loved that programming. I didn't care it was Japanese. I enjoyed it for what it was. But by today's standards, I shouldn't be watching that. That's not meant for me.
Well, and I think where they're going to scream appropriation is if you walk out with a Sailor Moon costume on. But
I guess still want to do that. I still want to do that.
But guess what? I've seen plenty of white people do that. Also, what gets really funny is Japanese men dressing as Sailor Moon. That's one of those weird cultural phenomenons that was absolutely hilarious. I remember watching this, you know, random internet, scrolling along, and there's a video of this very pretty Sailor Moon cosplayer doing the little poses. And then the guy recording was like, man, you're beautiful. And then in a very deep and masculine voice, thanks.
Sailor Moon says.
And everyone, because this is a place that actually practices inclusion, everyone just laughed. But, you know, that's where you find real inclusion, is those places where, you know, you can run into something like that. And, you know, it's just funny. It's interesting. That person probably wasn't even transgender. They were just having fun.
But here's the thing. Anime, music, art, culture, that should unite us. And journalism should be something that we could all say objectively, this is straight facts, this is straight news. But that's not what that is anymore. Journalism is now a code word for opinion pieces with 25% facts and thrown in there. And
I have to disagree with that. If you pick up one of these news articles, it's not that they're opinion with 25% facts. They are. You can actually pick up one of these articles that's actually news and not an editorial. It is facts. The bias is in selecting what the facts are and how they're presented. So do you present it as X percent cause damage or X percent are safe every single day? And it's only this 1% that is hurt by whatever this is.
I think the problem, though, and this is why I don't think it's facts, because for me, when I say facts, it's the whole entire picture. You put facts that are positive and facts that are negative, and then you let the person decide, the person reading the article decide what the opinion should be. What these newspapers do is that they cherry pick the facts. Yes. So that you get an impression at the end of the article of, okay, my opinion should be this. And that's not what hard news used to be. Investigative journalism, opinion pieces, those things are totally different. And we've blurred the lines to a point where hard news is no longer straight facts. It's somebody's opinion mixed in with supportive data.
That being said, I always, every time I hear somebody, well, it's not like it used to be, I have to argue, even a Walter Cronkite, who is supposed to be that icon of this golden era of news, he had bias too. And there was a cherry picking of facts. I think the reason that a Walter Cronkite got away with it is because the internet wasn't around to provide an alternative point of view, even if it's, quote, alternative facts. But one of the things that we have now, and this is why I don't care about the New York Times. I just don't, and I never will. And this just proves to me why this is confirmation bias here. Let me show my bias. I have confirmation bias of New York Times is not worth my time. Because now I can go to different media outlets. If I want something that I'm probably going to agree with, I'm going to go to Reason.
Fox for me.
Sure. I'll listen to Fox. Some of Fox I agree with. Some of that I find kind of gross. And heck, it can even be the same anchor that one day it's just like, okay, I can get along with that. Or the next day it's just like, this person is horrible and I don't want to hear them anymore. I also listen to left-leaning stuff. I don't know why. Slate likes to shove their content in my Facebook feed. Screw it. I'll read it. Sometimes I want to, when I'm in the right mindset, I want to stick my head that far up my butt to see from their point of view.
That must hurt.
Well, now there's the broken clock theory, and you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. And so about twice a day, they're right. And then the rest of it is, well, now I know the difference between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation by their standards. I understand now their different LGBTQ TIA terms. And why they're supposed to be important. I get exposed to this stuff. It's interesting. I'll actually play the game and entertain an idea without accepting it.
I agree with you on that. I try to do that as well, but I definitely feel that that is a time and place. I'm not in the mood for that every day because absolutely. I can see through the persuasion tools that are being used. And at the best day, I start cackling at them because they're so transparent in what they're trying to do.
And this is why I am not subscribed to the newspaper of record.
I thought you loved the New York Times.
I don't recall ever reading it. Wall Street Journal? On occasion.
That used to be good. They hate Trump.
I hadn't picked that up from them.
Yeah.
But it's still funny. I mean, Wall Street has done well under Trump, so whatever. Nowadays, one of the things that seems a bit unprecedented, and maybe it's just I hadn't seen it as much, or maybe there just wasn't enough of a platform. It does seem interesting that nowadays we've gotten to a point where it's actually okay to show such vitriol to the President of the United States. I don't think he's Jesus. I don't think he's the greatest person in the world. He's a human being that is flawed but interesting. And I've been okay.
You've seen the recent polls. Trump is supposed to be behind by double digits. You think they're accurate?
What does 2016 tell you?
That we're going to win big.
Huge! Well, and the thing that, I mean, the problem that the left has right now is Biden is essentially their Mitt Romney candidate that they're just hoping that enough people would vote for a ham sandwich over Trump that's what lets Biden win. I don't see too much excitement for Biden, and I hope there isn't because that guy's kind of a creep, and he also is not very good on things like criminal justice reform.
So here's the thing, and I've said this on the show. It's very empowering to vote for someone if they have a strong platform and you believe in that person. It is not exciting to vote against somebody and voting for another person just to basically put out your proverbial middle finger at the other person. That is not going to drive you to the polls during COVID. If you believe in something, if you believe in somebody's platform and what they're doing, you believe that it's well-intentioned, you believe that it will be good for the country, that is much more powerful and you will go out and vote. If you're just voting against somebody and using somebody as a proxy,
you might not wake up in time that morning to make it to the polls.
Right.
Because just didn't have enough energy. Sorry.
Right. And Romney was the anybody but Obama vote back in 2012.
Unfortunately, that guy was so bad that I actually had to vote for Gary Johnson.
You voted for Gary Johnson.
Here's the problem. I found both candidates to be morally reprehensible. And Romney, I couldn't even call the lesser of two evils.
Well, I think you had the right instincts because look at the mess Romney has turned out to be.
Yeah. So based off of that, I feel good about that.
You've been vindicated.
Yeah.
You're forgiven.
So, but I did vote for Trump. Now, honestly, I did actually like him as the FU candidate. I still stand by one of my favorite things about Trump and the current administration is that he's making everyone question two pillars of our society that we have not questioned in a long time. Our federal government, and our media. And so now we're getting to this point of, first off, I actually like that people want to now question the federal government, law enforcement, all that stuff. I believe that we need law enforcement, but I also believe that that is a power that needs to be checked. All of our powers have cross-checking, just like we have the Constitution and three different offices keeping each other in check. Who's keeping the police in check? They have the capability for lethal force. All we need to do is check them and then let them do their job.
I think you bring up an important point. Questioning your institutions sometimes is necessary so that you can dissect them and make them better. And our journalist class needs to be dissected and improved.
Absolutely.
I think they need to be more objective, and not objective from a liberal standpoint. They actually need to look at a conservative point of view and a liberal point of view and acknowledge their own biases and check their own biases. Because I remember when we were, you know, when I went to grad school for political science, they would tell us, check your biases. You have them. You need to look at the world through as much of a neutral scope as possible.
And then still admit that you're biased.
Right.
I do my best to not be biased and then still admit that I am a biased individual. And so this is one of the things where it sounds like the New York Times legitimately tried. They recognize that they have a bias. They're a little bit too far left and that they need to be able to diversify, be able to be inclusive to more voices. And they actually wanted to, at some point, make it so that we're going to have five biased opinions. You have the opportunity to read all five or whichever ones you want. And now we can have a discussion. Now we can have thought. And it sounds like that's been rejected.
So, you know, what's interesting is that desire for more inclusive content is partially what led to the creation of this podcast. The liberals, the left, kind of controls the podcast landscape. And I believe we really need to have more voices sitting in front of a microphone like this and talking in that podcast format, because you need more voices as part of the conversation. If you just let one side control, you're never going to get the full picture of any topic.
And in the spirit of inclusion, this podcast has included a lot of different people. We included people that did not agree with us. We've also had people from more of a middle of the road set up. So it's good to just listen to the different voices around you. And it's sad that the New York Times has failed in this regard. We're going to have to just hold the funeral for half a second, play a little tiny violin, and press on. So now that we've gotten over that this is the leftiest of the left of publications, and they might as well be Stalin's personal paper, they are the paper of the party. And I'm not even talking about the Democratic Party, but the People's Democratic Republic Party. What publication are you going to be listening to now?
Well, I don't read the New York Times. I avoid it like the plague.
So who do you listen to for your liberal slant and for your conservative slant?
I like the Washington Times. I think they're more even-handed.
Okay.
I also hear in on the local level, I try to read the Miami Herald, even though I cringe while I do it for the liberal slant. But at least I know where they're coming from, right? But if I try to get my news from a variety of sources, of course, Fox, when I need my right-wing propaganda. No offense, Fox.
It is propaganda.
I cannot stand MSNBC, though. For me to watch MSNBC, I need like a bottle of wine because the stupidity on there really starts to hurt my neurons.
Well, because I'll, like I said, I don't know why Slade likes to shove things in my face. So, okay, I'll read that. But you put Rachel Maddow on, I'm going to get up and walk out the room. Because you're not even getting information. You're just getting angry diatribe. I have not ever learned anything from her. So I'd love to listen to people from the opposite point of view that can give me interesting statistics, can discuss philosophy, stuff like that. But someone just turning red in the face and saying, you did this, you turned America into a Nazi Third, Fourth Reich, that's not useful. It's not even interesting.
But I think that's what she peddles in, and that's been her success model. Just like O'Reilly did that. And now
Bill O'Reilly, and yes. Now, I was going about to say that.
And Tucker Carlson, even though I like his programming, tends to have a similar approach to news coverage.
Tucker Carlson is diet Bill O'Reilly.
Well, he's younger. It's not the same generation.
I don't know. I think he's gross. He's right twice a day, like a broke clock. Not my first choice.
I like Hannity.
That shocked me. When you started putting on Hannity's podcast, I was actually shocked at how much I can pleasantly sit down and listen to statistics, listen to thought, listen to theory, philosophy. His is at least a lot better, but I think, once again, that's because it's the podcast format. I did not like him on Fox News. He usually annoyed me on Fox News.
Okay, and I think people are different in every format. I think the format kind of dictates too.
And that's my problem. I do not watch news. I cannot stand televised news because it is nothing but snippets without proper context and without proper analysis. You turn on the news and it's going to be more news about Michael Jackson. Or what does the neighbor across the street think of the shooting that happened down the road? That's not useful. But if you start telling me about statistics about shootings, telling me about statistics about that particular city, or start talking about the philosophy of the right to gun ownership, and if you want to tell me that you don't believe in the Second Amendment, and I strongly advocate for it, but if you don't believe in it, you think it should be abolished or should be a lesson or whatever, I still want to hear your voice. I still want to listen to it. Not that I'm going to agree with you, but I want to understand what people's concerns are. So that cannot happen on television, but my goodness, it works pretty great in a podcast format. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the better news format.
Are you pandering?
Maybe.
Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. And Chris, thanks for coming on the show. So guys, thanks for joining in and listening to today's discussion. And remember, wherever you get your news, keep in mind that there's always biases. These people have an agenda. News today is not about delivering the best facts. It's about delivering the best storyline that fits your agenda. So hold these publications accountable. Use your critical thinking skills. And always keep in mind that ultimately, this November, the choice is yours. You are in the driving seat. You decide who gets elected. And that part of that process is you understanding that news comes from a certain perspective and that straight news is no longer a reality. That you need to be critical. You need to look at multiple sources to get the full picture. So do your homework, take initiative, and remember, we're not your dad's political news show. So spread the word. We're on Instagram at Right Owl Politics. You'll find us there with all the most up-to-date information about the show and upcoming programs. So follow, like, and subscribe. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time.